mai fondali sau ne altri, avendo discomaci, I'm representing the Republic of the Western Cape in this committee. There is a constitution of its own in this. There is a constitution of its own in this province. You don't fund MECs, you fund ministers.
Good morning, gentlemen. My name is Zola Leza, from the province of the Eastern Cape.
DG, can you just a minute?
No, thanks, thank you very much, Jay, and thanks for welcoming us to the meeting of the Portfolio Committee. We are carbon credit of the Select Committee. I'm sorry. My apologies, Chairman. My name is Ngosinathi Ndlebo. I work for the Department of Labor. And could I then ask also the ladies and gentlemen on my left to also introduce themselves?
My name is Majuta Naturulwana from the digital office.
Good morning. My name is Virtual Fico from IAS. Thank you.
Morning. It's Peggy Madonna, Chief Financial Officer of the Department of Labor.
Morning. Sam Murugawa, Public Employment Services.
Good morning, honorable members. Slum Gwandwang, Department of Labor, Shelter Employment Services.
And I'm Les Kettle, Deputy Director General of Policy and Industrial Relations.
Morning, Chair, honorable members. My name is Richmond Ngudi, in Performance Monitoring and Evaluation, Department of Labor. Thank you.
Morning, my name is Dimitra Fedora, Trading with Trending Management.
Good morning, Tarun Funaji Talbu, Department of Labor, Internal Audit.
Morning, this is Dixon Benikai Mkhon, Department of Labor.
Morning, my name is Pesivat Grilal from Bunganga. I'm a member of this committee.
Morning, Papi Tau, member of this committee.
Thank you, Chairperson. My chairman, Ninaliwan Napija, the Vakalimpopo province, the province of Love and Peace. The member of the Select Committee, the one and the Whip, the A Committee. Ninaliwan.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Herman Groenewald, member of the committee and representing the North West province.
Good morning. My name is Renal Rita. I'm the researcher for the committee.
Good morning, I am Lolio Sibisi, the Committee Secretary. As I said, can we get the presentation on the report, the annual report, and also on the concerns the committee raised. Over to you.
Yeah. Thanks, thank you very much, Chair. What we will seek to do is that the presentation is on the annual report is going to be staggered into three different aspects. One aspect is in terms of the general organizational overview in terms of how we have performed against the targets that we have set for ourselves. The other area would be a specific focus on the issue of the financial management and financial performance, in which I would also pull in our CFO to deal with. Section 5 of the presentation then deals with the shelter employment factors, yes, in terms of performance, but also what will would want to achieve there is that we should also specifically deal with the issues that were raised by the visits of the select committee to Durban and Pietermaritzburg and possibly the other areas as well. So the CEO, Chief of the Executive Officer of the Shelter and Employment Practice, has been given a brief to also hone into those specific matters. And with your permission, Chair, can I suggest that we start off with possibly slide number 7 and 8. What the rest is what we already know. It has always been there. Yes, Chair, thanks. So we'll hone into that area, which firstly just a reflection that says that the report itself spans over 4 different branches that are being articulated there in terms of what those branches are. But in terms of the issues of performance, taking for an example the need for the Department of Labor to strengthen the institutional capacity of the department, and the annual target that we had set for ourselves was that we needed to deal with the customer complaints within a specified period. In this case, we're saying 90% of such complaints needed to be resolved within 14 days. In terms of how we've performed, we stood at 98% of the resolution of such cases and attending to such customer complaints within the stipulated timeline. On the question of representativity insofar as women, youth, and people with disability, we said that 34% of women needed to be in the employee levels of the senior management service, and 43% of young people should also be there, and 3% should be people with disability. In terms of how we have performed for the period under review, it's 38.5% of women that are at senior management service level as of the 31st of March 2012, and 40% are young people in the department as of the same period. On the question of people with disabilities, we stand at 2.6%. And one of the challenges that we said we would also need to end significantly was the issue of reducing the vacancy rate to below 8% by 31st March 2012. Our vacancy rate as we speak stands at 7.2% in terms of how we performed towards that target. But we do hope also, Chair, that we will want to improve significantly in terms of our performance at this level, given the macro agenda of where the country is around the issue of job creation, for example. We had also said that 70% of misconduct cases needed to have been finalized within the applicable prescripts as at the 21st March 2012. In terms of our performance, we have been able to achieve 79% of misconduct cases having been finalized in line with the applicable prescripts. On the question of developing an exit and services transfer plan and implementation thereof, in terms of performance, is that the exit and services transfer plan has been developed and subsequently approved, and it's now being implemented and rolling out in terms of phases that they have got to then follow. The promotion of equity in the labor market. We have said that we needed to inspect workplaces of JSE listed companies as well as ordinary employers and so on, and achieve and look at the achievement of compliance with equity employment legislation, at least at a level of about 80%. And in that regard, we then said that 10,000 workplaces Excuse me. My apologies, Chair. I just need some water. 10,000 workplaces were to be inspected, and 60 of those needed to have been the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. Thank you very much. Is Johannesburg Stock Exchange companies, and then of course those that are designated with targeted 140, and for procedural inspections we targeted ourselves at 9,800. In terms of how we have performed in Astra for the period under review, we have inspected 10,223 workplaces. 65 of those are Johannesburg Stock Exchange listed companies. 200 of those are designated the employers. 9,940 companies were inspected in terms of procedural inspections. And we do refer your good sense to page 39 of our annual report insofar as the provincial breakdown. On the strategic objective of protecting vulnerable workers, we also have said that 130,000 inspections needed to be conducted with 80% compliance rate. In terms of how we fared against this particular target, we stand at 172,300 routine inspections having been conducted, and 74% is the compliance rate. And the table in there is actually the provincial breakdown in terms of the inspections conducted and the rate of compliance. We also had said that we needed to have conducted 15,000 lit inspections in the targeted sector. We hereby report that 21,394 blitz inspections were conducted against the 15,000 that was targeted. And for more information, it's on page 40 and 41 of our annual report. We also have in that section the provincial as well as the sector breakdown. Of received complaints were to be resolved and attended to within 14 days. We then do report that 135,807 labor-related complaints were received, and of that number, 110,610, which represents 74%, were settled within 14 days. And also there we have a tabulation of that form of performance each province. On the objective around strengthening social protection, we said that we'd establish a baseline by conducting at least 20 audits per sector and a brief per sector and a seminar a year. In terms of how we've gone about that particular target, the 722 inspections were conducted in the iron and steel sector, and in the construction sector we stand at 1,003 inspections. In the chemical sector it's 344, in the agriculture and forestry sector it's 1,738. More information is on page 43 and 44 of the annual report. We also said that 200 workplaces were to be inspected in order to reduce exposure to silica dust at least by a reduction of at least by 2%, my apologies. We then do have a report that 213 workplaces were inspected against the target of 200 workplaces. Follow-up inspections will continue to determine the level of reduction to exposure. Both at the national level, we had set ourselves at 200, but also insofar as the Gauteng province, we also had the similar target, which was 200. And insofar as performance is concerned, we page a respective area with standard 213. On our contribution to employment creation, we have said that the number of registered job seekers on the employment services for South Africa needed to be captured and be part of the of our system. And our target was the 600,000 reporting job seekers registered to be on the system. In terms of the performance, we have work seekers registered and the number is 553,883. And thereunder we also provide the provisional calculation. 50% of job seekers registered on our system were to be assessed and profiled within 60 days of registration. We hereby report that 222,956, which it stands at 40% of the 553,000 job seekers registered in the system, were assessed and profiled. We also provide some further detail as per each province on that slide. 450,000 job seekers were to be placed and or referred to job opportunities. In terms of how we performed, 96,555 were referred and or placed into job opportunities. We also do make a note, two levels. The one is, of course, in terms of the provincial breakdown. The other one relates to the fact that the other work seekers in this particular number were also provided with counseling and employment enhancement and other services by the Department of Labor. We also had said that we needed to capture a specific number of employers and go to register vacancies on our system, the employment services of the South Africa system. And our target was the 2,000. In terms of the actual performance, it's 2,475 companies that are using our system to register vacancies. We also provide the provincial breakdown on that slide. On the private employment agencies, the registration thereof, we had targeted 1,500. In terms of the actual performance, it's 1,162 private employment agencies that have been registered. And then we have the provincial breakdown. As part of our efforts to contribute to employment creation, one of the focal points is the question of the need to save jobs through social mainly interventions. And our target was that we needed to at least achieve 20,000, needed to achieve a 20,000 mark insofar as the actual sort of jobs that needed to be saved. We hereby report that for the year under the review, we stand at 15,165 jobs that we raised through our social plan interventions. The sheltered employment factories needed to have a policy and a legal framework developed and put in place. Therefore, our target was to ensure that we needed to have the legal status of such sheltered employment factories and business case finalized. Now, the legal establishment provision is also part of the Employment Services Bill. The National Treasury has already approved the tender for services for a service provider for the second phase of the development of the business case. Increased sales and of goods from the service products, all members, is the same thing as sheltered employment factories. needed to increase that level so that that could also lead to more intake of people with disabilities into sheltered employment centers. And our target was 30% of sales, leading to 500 more people with disabilities employed in the sheltered employment factories, subject to government departments placing 30% of their orders with sheltered employment factories. In terms of the actual performance, we stated 0.67% increase in sales that was recorded, and no additional people with disabilities were employed, and only 1.47% increase in sales and orders was placed by government departments. The note that we make there is that we also do have insufficient orders placed by government departments. Insofar as assisting companies to facilitate constructive dialogue between social partners, employers and employees to improve productivity, and our target stood at 120 companies, we have been able to do so for 275 companies that have been assisted. Productivity brochures and electronic newsletter was to be published during the productivity month. We needed to, our target was for 5 such brochures to be produced, and we currently stand at 8 brochures that have been printed thus far and 8 electronic newsletters that have been published. The productivity month campaign needed to have been conducted, that was one. The target in focusing mainly ensuring that at least 2 regional awards and as well as 1 national award functions are held. In terms of the actual performance, it's 1 national productivity award function that has been held thus far, and 5 regional award functions that have been held. As part of this ongoing effort, we also do need to assist SMME managers to be able to manage matters related to intellectual property. And I think it was for 3,000. That's why we've been able to train 2,842 managers. On the need to conduct a research study on the impact of municipal programs on SMEs in relation to productivity and jobs. We should have combined the research report and published such a research report for the year under review. In such a report, research report has been completed and 4 seminars have been conducted. On the question of the number of public servants' expenses approved by compensation fund and paid, the target was for the claims approved by the Compensation Fund Commissioner going to be submitted. In terms of the actual performance, outstanding claims inclusive of 1999 to September 2011, the total outstanding is the 20.9 million received from National Treasury, and additional allocation was received from National Treasury to the tune of about 26 million. And what in total has been transferred to the compensation fund is 36 million if we were to take both 2012 working backwards to 1999. And as for the outstanding claims to be paid to compensation fund, they stand at 1.2 million. On the promotion of equity in the labor market, the Employment Equity Act and its regulations were to be amended, and that was, and therefore the target there was to have promulgation of such. Insofar as how DOL has performed, NEDLAC negotiations on the Employment Equity Bill was postponed to commence in April 21st due to prolonged negotiations on the Labor Relations Act and the Credit Conditions of Employment Act bills. And the Code of Good Practice and Technical Assistance Guidelines on HIV and AIDS have got to be reviewed and amended, And our target was to ensure that the code and technical assistance guidelines are amended. The code, insofar as the performance, the code on HIV and AIDS and the world of work has been reviewed and finalized by the 28th of March, 2012. On assessing income differentials to determine race and gender disparities in salary, our target was to achieve the figure of 50. We currently stand at 58 income differentials having been assessed to determine race and gender disparities in salaries. On the Basic Conditions of Employment Act amendments in particular, the bills were approved by Cabinet and submitted to Parliament, and of course there have been sessions countrywide that have been held around information sharing sessions, but also public hearings were also held even at the level of Parliament itself. On the review of sectoral determination, our target was to publish an amended sectoral determination for civil engineering, taxi, contract cleaning, domestic workers, farm workers, wholesale and retail foresters. In terms of performance, we have sectoral determinations that have been reviewed and published in the taxi industry, contract cleaning, domestic industry, and farm worker industry, as well as forestry. Industries. So those sectoral determinations have already been reviewed. On the need for us is the South Africa through the Department of Labour having got to strengthen bilateral and multilateral relations. We have said that we needed to ensure that compliance with ILO constitutional requirements in terms of Article 19 and 22 of the Constitution of the ILO is met. And therefore, the target was to compile and submit reports in consultation with programs and other departments on South Africa's compliance in law, policy, as well as the practice. In terms of how we've fared against this particular target, we hereby report that two Article 19 questionnaires on unratified on social security convention have been submitted to the ILO, and six Article 22 reports on ratified conventions were submitted to the ILO. On developing briefing documents on and South African positions on the agenda items for UNLAC, ALSAC, ILO Governing Body, and ILC, SADC, the ELS. Our delegations have participated in the annual meetings of these multilateral bodies, and details of such appear in our annual report. We also held the 12th African Regional Meeting during the period under review. And the country's, South Africa's Decent Work Country Program needed also to be implemented as part of, as one of the targets in pursuance of this objective. We hereby report that regular meetings of the steering committee and technical implementation committee were held to monitor implementation of projects in priority output areas as agreed. A part of the bilateral and multilateral relations is also the need for us to enter into memoranda of understanding with respective countries and from time to time review and sign those. For the period under review, a memorandum of understanding has been entered into with a country, with China, and all that we are waiting for now is the ratification thereof in terms of a signature onto such a memorandum of the understanding. On the promotion of sound labor relations, we have said that we needed to extend collective agreements within 90 days. Our target was that we would target 18 collective collective agreements being published within 60 days of receipt. We signed 24 collective agreements with an average turnaround time of 57 days. On the decision to register new labor organizations being taken within 90 days, we stand at 144 labor organizations having been registered within an average turnaround time of 104 days. Insofar as monitoring the impact of legislation, there was a need for us to publish four annual labor market reports which seek to review, needed to develop those and disseminate them. That target has been met in the sense that the four annual labor labor market reports were produced, approved and published. And these include the industrial action reports, report of 2011, which actually is the report that captures and provides a trend analysis on industrial disputes in the country. The other report is the other labor market bulletin, which in a sense is a document that provides a general overview of key indicators regarding performance of the South African economy, as well as the labor force and wage agreements for the respective financial year. The third report published was the annual administrative statistics report, which presents the data series in the last 12 months of 2011, and it considers only selected key indicators to assess the progress made by each branch within the department. The fourth labor market report published is the job opportunity and unemployment in the South African labor market, which examines the deficiency in the demand and supply of labor based on the analysis of vacancies and unemployment insurance data. On the same subject of monitoring the impact of legislation, we had covered that the implementation of the RME Agenda 2 continues with the following projects. The first project being the evaluation of the NSDS to UIF non-compliance in the taxi, domestic and catering sector, assessment of the registration, recruitment and selection services in ESA, Employment Services of South Africa. The following RME projects have been completed and submitted to the Minister and disseminated through research seminars. One is the evaluation of NSDS 2, UIF client satisfaction survey, UIF non-compliance in the tax, domestic and catering sectors, assessment of registration, recruitment and selection services in ESA. Chair, I would ask that we now that we come to section 4 of this presentation, that the CFO takes us through the financials as well as the audit findings, and immediately thereafter I would then ask the CEO of Shelters Employment Factories to zoom into the area of this report with regarding that. Thank you.
Thanks, honorable members. In terms of the budget allocation and the utilization per main division of the board of the Department of Labor, the department was allocated 2.17 billion to achieve its objective for the year under review, of which we were able to spend 2.007 billion, which then gave us the variance of 10.2 million. The translated into percentage terms, that means we spent 99.5% of our budget during the year under review. And when the AG reviewed our financials, they then issued an unqualified report in terms of an audit opinion with no emphasis of matter issues. However, there were other findings on the financials and also on the performance information. The first one was the predetermined objectives, which I think the Auditor General stipulated that our performance targets were specific. They were also the performance in terms of IBIS, they were also not specific in terms of IEF. The performance indicators were not well defined in terms of IEF. There were also other matters relating to procurement and contract management which were also identified. The goods and services of the transaction value above 500 were not procured without inviting competitive bids. The other issue was that the deviation from normal processes to National Treasury and the AG was not reported within the specified time. Employees of the department, there was also the issue around the employees of the department who performed remunerative work outside their employment without written permission from the relevant authority. There were also other issues around human resource management which were identified in terms of the funded vacancies not being filled within 12 months and vacant positions in the department were not advertised within the 6 months. The last issue that the AG also highlighted was around the expenditure management in terms of the money owed to the contractual obligations and money owed by the department were not settled within the required 30 days. Those were the issues, the residual issues that were identified by the Auditor General in our annual report for the year under review, which is the 2011-2012 financial year. That concludes the financial position and audit outcomes for the annual report. Thanks.
Good morning, honorable members. Last week I had the opportunity of hosting some of the honorable members in some of our factories in Peter Rosberg and in Durban. And I took them through the existing facilities just to indicate some of the challenges that exist in the entities. Yes, some of the challenges that existed in entities and the potential that those entities had with regards to transformation from the point of view of race, gender, and the possibility to employ quite a number of people with disabilities. Chair, I have noted the questions that the members of the Select Committee raised with regards to the specific challenges in those sectors. But I would, however, propose that I deal with those questions as part of an overall turnaround strategy for the sheltered employment factories, rather than the specific questions that they relate to the three factories mentioned. Because the three factories that would have visited are part of the 12 factories, and therefore they are part of the turnaround strategy. The presentation deals with the background with regards to the factories, that these factories were established almost about 65 years ago, post the Second World War, to provide employment opportunities for those who could not be integrated into the open labor market as a result of the injuries that they would have sustained post the Second World War. And they were then falling under the then Minister of Manpower. Post 1994, the Department of Labor assumed the responsibility over those factories, and the then Minister of Labor identified quite a number of challenges as they related to those factories. But first and foremost, those factories remained untransformed. Secondly, absolutely no legal identity. Thirdly, those factories could not have, even though they had the capacity to provide goods and services to various government departments, such as furniture and linen to government hospitals, but without them being transformed, that is, as entities for people with disabilities, and as entities having an identity, and thirdly, as entities having the ability to reflect the new demographics post 1994. Those factories were either going to collapse or alternatively, if they don't collapse, they don't create employment opportunities for people with disabilities. If you look at right at the bottom of the presentation, the minister, the then minister, and therefore commissioned a study with regards to ensuring that the factories have a clear and definable legal status, so that they operate as efficient entities, and thirdly, that they broadly advance the government's agenda with regards to people with disabilities. So the background with regards to the turnaround strategy arises out of an identification of the fact that those factors held the potential to employ people with disabilities, had the potential to contribute towards the government overall strategy to ensure that people with disabilities had gainful employment. The next page deals with the location of the factories. That you've got 12 factories situated in 7 of 9 provinces, with the exception of Mpumalanga and Limpopo. And the part of the turnaround strategy in the long term entails establishing, doing a feasibility study with regards to establishing two more factories, both in Mpumalanga and Limpopo, but first and foremost, in the next 2 years, stabilizing the existing factories, pursuing the potential that exists with regards to the existing factories, ensuring that from a managerial business point of view, those existing entities have got the potential to be stabilized with regards to generating income and sales. Once that possibility is achieved, then proceed to look at the opportunities of establishing two more factories, the board in Mpumalanga and the Limpopo. The next page deals with the business case and perhaps to use a more acceptable term, that the business case entails, chapter 7, a turnaround strategy. The turnaround strategy would have entailed the fact that would look at the existence of sheltered employment factories or factories with people with disabilities in the domestic environment and globally. Look at what was happening in the global market with regards to the existence of those factories, what the objectives were, what the potential was, and therefore the business case first and foremost look at the situational analysis. And the situational analysis then therefore led us to what now we term as the turnaround strategy. The turnaround strategy has got the following components. It has got the component which is included in the Employment Services Bill to ensure that those factors, in terms of that bill, those factors have a legal identity. They become a legal entity, which in the past has not been the case. So the factories had operated in the past on the basis of a memorandum of understanding that has existed since 1949 between the Prime Minister of Manpower and the management of the factories. We now want to ensure that the factories are conferred with a legal status. So the Employment Services Bill, once enacted into law, would then establish those factories as a legal entity. The next slide, which is 5.2, again, is the continuation of what the report with regards to transformation suggested as options. And the option that we currently considering and implementing is an option that entails the following, honorable members: ensuring that the existing entities, that is, so the 12 entities in the 7 of the 9 provinces, are stabilized in terms of management, stabilized in terms of generating income and more sales, stabilized in terms of management, stabilized in terms of transformation, stabilized in terms of ensuring that there's a legal identity, stabilized in terms of ensuring that the existing factories hold the potential for us to proceed to the next provinces to establish new factories. We're currently working with the Treasurer's Technical Assistance Unit, Honorable Chair, developing an implementation plan over the next 2 years. What is it that we will do in the next 2 years to achieve exactly the objectives that are part of turnaround strategy? some of those objectives as are indicated in note in terms of sales, introducing a new managerial structure, the consideration with regards to ensuring that there are business development managers, finalizing the legal identity of the factories, and ensuring that the stability in the existing entities will then proceed to the next the provinces as indicators. The next slide with regards to employment equity. I must indicate, as indicated, that the picture with regards to both racial and gender demographics in the factories and as present is extremely an ugly picture, exactly as a result of the fact that not much work has been done with regards to transformation in the factories. Again, this has to do with the following. Inadequate orders from government departments that would have ensured that we implement an employment equity ban as fast as possible. But issues related to transformation, honorable members, again, are part of the turnaround strategy. That is to stabilize the factories, and as we ensure that we create more employment opportunities, we will turn around issues of gender and race in the factories. So 5 points that deals with the current information with regards to the breakdown, with regards to the number of employees in the factories, that currently we've got about 1,100 employees. The factories have got the potential to employ about 3,000 employees, the current existing ones. The racial demographics have been extremely skewed as a result of what we've inherited in the past, hopefully with a clear strategy to address that moving forward. The next slide is a continuation of, it's a breakdown with regards to racial and gender demographics at managerial level, it's a factor profile with regards to race and gender, the breakdown with regards to racial groups. It's, as indicated, it's a very bad picture, and it's a picture that management has undertaken in the next 2 years to address to the extent that we stabilize the factories, we get more orders with regards to employing more people with disabilities, etc., etc. The next slide, it relates to the production facilities, their location, the various provinces, and what do they do, and their specialization with regards to the product range. Honorable members would have visited Pietermaritzburg back in Durban, and they would have realized that the potential that exists in Durban as opposed to Pietermaritzburg is much more greater, that there's energy, creativity that exists in Durban as opposed to Pietermaritzburg. That's applicable in the rest of the other factors, that you've got creativity, competitiveness that exists in the other factors. Those are elements of the various phases of the turnaround strategy, elements with regards to timelines, so what we've done with regards to the draft plan, etc. But the essence, if I may summarize, the overall presentation with regards to where we are at the moment, without necessarily going into much more greater detail. There are three related components with regards to what we're currently doing. It's the development of an implementation plan arising out of the turnaround strategy for the next 2 years. The elements of the implementation plan is a turnaround strategy in the factories. The turnaround strategy includes the changes and introducing a new management structure. Secondly, the introduction of a business development managers whose responsibility would be to lobby for long-term contracts with national and provincial governments for furniture and linen. That's part of the strategy, of the turnaround strategy. The second component of the turnaround strategy is to ensure that to the extent that the factories, as we grow sales and business, these factories employ more people with disabilities and therefore dealing with the race and gender demographics of the factory. The second element includes, as part of the turnaround strategy, is ultimately conferring what we define as the legal status to the factories, and the Employment Services Bill, once enacted, confers a legal status to those factories, that they now become
protected employment enterprises as opposed to employees with disabilities being regarded as short-term. The term completely changes, protect employment enterprises, protection of those disabilities, and therefore the government continue to provide assistance, both technical and financial assistance. The third component, Chair, with regard to the turnaround strategy, as I would have indicated, is stabilization. Stabilization, once we've stabilized the existing sectors, there is a potential for expansion in the existing sectors. Once we've stabilized the existing sectors in the next 2 years, we then proceed to look at the feasibility of establishing two more new factories, both in Limpopo and in Mpumalanga. That would be the gist of my presentation that covers most of the questions that we have raised, but the essence of the questions that we have raised relates to the turnaround strategy, even though they were specific to various factors. I thank you, Chair.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chair. Could I then proceed, Chair, towards the, I think we've applied the US towards the concluding. On slide number, I'm really getting old in my eyes. Amazing. Yeah, I think it's a slide, yeah, but the item on the presentation would be item 7, human resources. We think that that's also the important slide. That's the slide. Now, that slide basically amplifies the point about... Thank you very much. Yeah, that really comforts me quite a lot. That it's actually nothing to do with the age in my eyes. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Honourable members, that slide emphasizes the point about it's a depiction of the vacancy rate that we have. For instance, it's a breakdown per branch, but also it shows the number of posts that are occupied by warm bodies and so on. And then the third column is around the vacancy rate. And the status of some of the posts will be the last column. But we also added a slide which is it's a breakdown per the province, which is the same thing. So you have the province itself, and then of course the number of posts, the ones that are filled and the ones where we have vacancies, and so on. So it just builds onto the point about our vacancy rate being in overall at 7.2%. And then in terms of equity by occupational band, that's also the slide in terms of where do you have your concentrated point of the human resources per each category, and also the breakdown per demographics and so on. And I think the last slide, the change, it's just simply about the fact that we have noted that, as a department generally speaking, there are areas of progress that we seem to be making, but there are also areas where we're not progressing very well. In fact, the Auditor General's report has find out some element of regression, and that's very concerning. It says in certain areas we are regressing or we have not made progress and so on. In regards to such observations made by the AG, we then have put an action plan in place to look at in the best ways, the means of actual monitoring our own progress and ensuring that effective oversight responsibility is being exercised and so forth. I think associated with that is that what I've mentioned, the things that have been also cited by the Auditor General, you know, it's good that we have made we've attracted an unqualified audit opinion, for example, which is, you know, second year in a row after a 6-year period where we have not really been doing well, in other words, in a 6-year period of having qualified audit opinions, this financial year and the other financial year preceding this one, we have been able to attract the unqualified audit opinions and so on. But these specific areas that have also been pointed out, so, I mean, some of them is what the CFO spoke to, the question of some practices as far as human resources is concerned, the question of the compliance with the rules and regulations with a specific reference to issues of supply chain, for an example, and so forth. But I think the chartered employment sector is one of those areas where even if that these mainly are the challenges that you require a specific sort of attention and action on our side. But it's gratifying the fact that I don't know in how long a time we have attained an unqualified audit opinion for sheltered employment factories. And like in itself, it's a milestone. I mean, it's quite encouraging. It actually says that's a stepping stone for us to do better in that area of work. But there's of course a lot that needs to be done in terms of ensuring viability and sustainability of the factories that we run, and all sorts of manner of things. Now, our efforts moving forward are around mainly the question of ensuring that a level of service delivery, for instance. We've got to step up the efforts there. And we would like to, at some point, we would like to also appear before the Select Committee to deal with the issue of, for an example, we are currently conducting a study on the accessibility of our labor centers. Now, our labor centers, those are your service delivery point. We're also dealing with the issue of decentralization in the compensation fund, for an example. And we do think that yourselves, as the honorable members of this institution, they do need to be taken on board and will require, of course, your support around those particular areas of work. And of course, generally speaking, there are these other legislative areas which, in a sense, will inform the legislative program of Parliament. The Basic Conditions of Employment Act, the amendments to the Labour Relations Act, will seek pledge for support there in terms of ensuring that those areas that have been through, Employment Services Bill, the same sort of appeal that will also be looking for support around those specific sort of areas. So with that, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, can I please step off the platform in terms of the presentation of this particular report. Unless, of course, Chair, maybe if members of my team management have got additional points that they may want to make on the report, I think the permission could be obtained only from the chair whether to do that and so on. Let's take questions, Honourable Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, DT, and your team. I don't think there are any additions. Additions will come when the questions are asked, when they need to respond. Honourable Mabija, Honourable Dau, Honourable Hrunabas, Daniel, Honourable Mlenza, in that order.
I'm worried about this appointment of service providers. If you can just explain to me precisely what makes the department to appoint service providers to do something that we have appointed officials to do, because I don't understand why the implementers of programs cannot make a situational analysis, options, models, implementation plan. Is it a law that it should be done by service providers? I'm saying this looking at money, value for money, as one of the retrofitting principles. Remember, I'm a lawyer and I don't work in the department, but I need to be very certain so that I implement what I'm supposed to comfortably so. Thank you.
No, thanks. I jumped because of I'm glad to be excused at least by 11:30. I just got a message that something needed my attention. But coming back to the department, you know, I'm not a kind of a play singer, but one must just be honest. I mean, based on the report that we have been presented, I whispered to Honorable Mlelana that he says he is going to my office and do other things, because I'm quite impressed with the manner in which the department that firstly just the structure of the report. It's quite clear. It tells that these are where our targets, this is what we've achieved, this is what we could not achieve. And the motivation and context as well, it clearly lays out for you to better understand what is it that the department will be doing. Except for one thing. I'm impressed with the way the department has really performed over and above the question of the court. But there's only one worry, DG, that is the number of vacancies. I don't know when are you going to be fit. If that answer can be provided, lucky to me. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. From my side also, I want to congratulate the department with this unqualified report from the AG side. I will more concentrate on the shelter employment factories because that is fresh in my mind at this stage. What I want to know is, we visit a couple of these factories now up in Nyal, and the quality in the different places is not the same. And I know you mentioned about the turnaround strategy as well, and that is very important also. But what we found is that some of these factories have not material to work with. And what are you going to do to see that we get a standard to all the factories, that they have the same type of material, and all the factories are not working with the same thing, but that they at least have material, that people are not sitting there and haven't got any job at this place, as we have found now in Durban in one of the factories. that is a bit a concern for me, but I also think with this good report we have, that the department will be able to see that we can get on track with the material in all the factories as well. And we mentioned about fraud is taking place also in some of these factories. In if looking into the AG's report, he also mentioned it. And I want to know what type of control are we going to put in place in the factories so that it could not happen? And it's very easy to happen because if the control is not good, people can make their own things there and sell it to the public. So we must have a control at maybe at the gates and to see what is coming out and what is going in and that kind of thing. And the other thing is everything is centralized in Pretoria. Maybe we must also have a look into that. But I'm quite sure that there's some of these admin work we can decentralize to different places, and that will make the job a bit easier for the department as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson.
The department is getting an unqualified report for a couple of years now. But if you look at the opinions raised by the AG in the reports, some of them come every year, the same opinion. Let me make a personal example. With your unqualified report for the last 3 years or 4 years or so on, you're still having a method of procurement procedures, which for me it's a matter of systems. You still have methods of wrongfully remuneration paid. For me it's a matter of systems. And paying suppliers in terms of prescriptions. So this is the point which I'm saying, if you look in terms of opinions, it's actually, you don't expect it from your local government to get it, but you get it here at this level. So it raises the issue of your systems, internal systems, which manage, that include also your internal audit. Because for me, I pick it up every time it comes on, it's the same issues actually raised. The one thing which I want to understand, your compensation fund. It seems there is always a decline in it. What is the reason for it? Is it non-compliance? People don't report workplace injuries? We need to get the facts of it. And the old one, which I regularly raise, DG, is the issue of the enforcement agencies. I see that the issue of the manual is addressed. There is a manual for them, but it still remain a problem in terms of retaining them in your institution. And if you look, and the reasons given provided why they leave is because of the stipends which they receive. It's always about salary. And you are struggling to attract the skills in the department. The other issues I want to know in terms of your training for your enforcement agencies. How does it speak to your justice colleagues? Because it has to do sometimes the same kind of work in terms of case management and case flow. For me, that interlinks. There should be a relationship between the Justice College and where you join your recruits. I also believe there is a problem in terms of orientation when you are recruiting. Do you have a college or a training center where they get the training from? Because they are actually the law enforcement in your department. The second last one session is the issue of, I believe you have a problem in terms of when you recruit people, the vetting process.
What did you speak to the agencies? If it's only this department who experience problem of long waiting periods in terms of vetting. As I raise the issue of that, I also want to know that your retaining, your retention strategy in terms of your personnel in the organization. Thank you.
Thank you, Captain. Sorry that I'm in and out. Today there's no Maracana. So keep going. We are not even going to ask whether will you go and testify or not. We wish you don't. Shelter employment. I want to have a preamble. I've just forgotten the phrase, honorable, chronicle to you. girl that are in our league. That's not to say why. It's because they are our priority. We took a conscious decision that when you are in a 5-year term, you know, DJ, what it means by a fixed-year contract. Ours is fixed. So we told ourselves that from this particular department, we want to say to it that come 2014, as this collective, we want to pride ourselves in terms of saying this is our particular achievement as this select committee. So that's why we are so panicked. It is not that that number we are on your shoulder, at your back, whatever. It's just that you are fortunate that you are having a particular component which has aroused interest of us at the select committee. And I am happy that listening to the CEO's stabilization proposal, it's on par with our own term. So it fits. Come 2014, you will be done with stabilization, and we'll make this committee also to go hit a fresh night. We'll be proud of that FDS at that time. So that's why DG always, when we meet you, would always expect this. On page 29 of the annual report, I have some time going through this document. And I think Chalet also have some accolades to the picture around the timeous situation of documentation. I think we have also to thank you, DJ, for that. We received your documents in time and we were able to go through them. On page 29, around the issue of promotion of products produced by SES, this could not be achieved. And when you go around, you will notice that this could not be achieved. You are saying that due to capacity. If I were the author, I would say, CEO, due to the veracity, the imbalance in terms of the capacity level of the various managers of these FDS. Because when you go to some of these FDS, you would find these documents are in place. They are there, you see. But when you go to some, there's absolutely nothing. Now, this would take me to a question around the capacity levels of manager in these areas at the end. As to that, do the managers who run this trip understand? We asked this question, remember, when we were in. I think we asked this question, we were in Devon, after we had observed what was happening in Maritzburg. And then we had the question of these various capacity levels as to. Do all of them understand, because you are talking business, do they understand that they are actually running a business and how to run a business? PE is well. It's well. You will find a crying manager there. I'm not exaggerating. Literally crying. Hands on the head. Nothing to do. No innovation, nothing. You go to Gabon, Fundamentalism, but there is work done. You know, everybody is alive. Everybody eager to go to work and do something. Even when you look at them, they are moving. They are alive. But in terms of challenges, they are the same. There is no material. But those are working. So, have some respect. And now, because you are talking to the nation, which you're going to take some time, DJ, and you're not going to just throw out these people because of their management capacity level, which differ, is there now no way of trying to put in some capacity where it lacks? Because you're not going to throw them out.
The other one, Chair, which just came to mind, somebody said jokingly when we were in Kenya, what happens is because some have got mental disabilities and have been working with all these hard things. One was joking, you were there. One person was joking, saying, what happens? This one of them just say, ask you, what do you want here? No, and no. He has had all around, but we are mapping them out. And it's possible. It's possible. Now, after that, you know, conservation DC, I had a question at the back of my mind. Yes, we saw you have got your mini clinic or sick room or what. You do have those. But what about your professional, such as psychologists and the occupational therapists to be part of those, because we do not know what would happen.
Chair, there is also a question put as a suggestion by another colonel. What do I normally do when there are questions already asked by graduates? Like some of your race, but one of them have already discussed. But this one I didn't, because I wanted to put it the other way around, not as a suggestion, around the centralization of the supply chain management. Perhaps even you may assist Matun now from the financial point of view. I don't want to suggest decentralization when I do not know why did you decide to centralize. Because my understanding of that, yes, was that before there was this was decentralized. So now I don't want to jump and say go back. But one would ask now, what are the disadvantages and advantages of each of these? So that we are able, when we suggest, we take an informed kind of a decision. Of course, understanding that there would always be advantages and disadvantages of each. But then you can then weigh and say, what is the best? Chair, my last would be, I can hear that it is now becoming a culture, a CFO of the department, that you get unqualified audit opinions. And you have now pulled even the shelter employment sector into the loop.
But if you listen, comparing to what you gave us last year, there is an element of an increase in non-compliance regarding some regulations. Your supply chain management processes, your human resource management, your contract management. Now, it draws me to a question
of whether have you ever thought of aspects, because I know you have got a risk management. I don't have to ask to have, but I know you have your risk management. But now, how is it? Don't you think of assessing it, looking at it, so that you have your early warning signs in place? Because, honestly speaking, Chairperson, this, just because we're talking finances, it wouldn't just be saying they are minor. But when you are talking in actual fact, they are not substantive issues that one can stand up and say the department is failing because of this. It's just a question of timing.
Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for CEO and Director General for your presentation as presenting in this committee today. All questions our colleagues will cover me. The only why I'm worried as a person to ask that question, you as a CEO have some studies to approach department to buy a finisher in this case. If you have any problems, if the chairperson assists you to convince the department to go to buy the finisher, I understand that you got some tenders now in the different department. But if you have drawn a strategy of this in the first department, including Department of Labor, maybe a good idea to deal with this to make that right as well.
Thanks, Chair. My apology for coming late. I have other engagements. Chair, in the presentation of the DG, this memorandum of understanding, what do they take? Because they have been signed with many companies. The other one is, I think for a long time we have been complaining about the abbreviations for anybody who is a layman like myself. Sometimes I don't follow these abbreviations, and we have always requested that they be clarified, and it's not happening. Maybe we have to return these documents, that you rewrite them, because we always request that it is not been done. Coming to the finances, the CFO, you have been long in this position, but some of the findings here, I don't know whether they are deliberate. Procurement of contract management, without inviting competitive bids, deviation, normal procurement process. People perform communities work outside their employment. I think these are things that you know, and they are issues that you need to address, but they are coming up as if you are new in this position and you are not new in this position. This could have been avoided. And also, I'm not satisfied with unqualified. We need clean audit. We need to go for clean audit, not unqualified report. And going to what is close to my heart, the chartered benefactories. When I first saw these factories, I said to myself, these factories have a potential. They can be self-reliant, employ more people, and also become competitive. I was impressed when I saw it in Cape Town here, in Marieberg as well as in Durban. There are skills that can be acquired, and also the products that are produced there are of good quality. I even said to myself, our youth always complain that they don't have the skills, but here are the factories where we can train them to have skills. Maybe you need to look into that to teach. How can you utilize those countries for you to get skills? For instance, woodwork is there,
welding, screening, and sewing. So if we can have a program, just the normalist will train them, so that after that, they'll be having skills that they can use wherever they are, or even open their own factories. But what is also of concern to me, it is this issue of centralization of procurement. I don't know whether the CFO, do you have play an oversight role over this? Because it's a problem if everything is centralized to one office. And how do you monitor that they don't deviate or anything does not go wrong? So I just want to get clarity from the CFO. How do you monitor this office? Also on the same of the structure. I see the structure at additional level. It seems to me paying many people, and those people who should be employed in factories, not at that level. The other one is the issue of maintenance of these buildings. It's not good, they are dilapidated, and I don't know why we are not using the Department of Public Works to maintain this. The other one that we complain about is the issue of transport for disabled people. It's not being taken care of. We even have some proposals why don't approach municipalities, why don't they get sponsorship for buses that will ferry these people to their place of work. The other one was the question of minimum wages. For instance, in Marisbeck, they were earning about 3,000 to 4,500. And one of the employees there is using about 1,200 for transport. So if you deduct that, he gets peanuts that he takes home. I think the other one is the standardization of the management, because we cannot allow a situation whereby you find that in another factory one person operates like this, in another factory one person operates like that. I think we need to have to standardize as well as this operation. I think they can just vary out of how a person is innovative on his plant. But the way they have to manage and operate, it must be the same. And these people, they have to meet and keep one another so that those weaknesses or challenges that are there can be overcome. I think we need to have we need a lot of improvement in this CES. I think I always complain that in this, for instance, in past years, every time they see a bailout, and these entities they are profitable, but they depend too much as SABC and so on. They depend too much as Eskom. They want the government to bail them out, and even in this one, SEF, as I said, it has a potential. They will always say, the money is not there, it needs to increase. But if we can run them correctly, they can be self-reliant and increase the employment of disabled people.
Thank you, Honorable.
Thank you, Chairperson. DG, myself, a lot of questions are basically directing them to your heads, but only to say to you, coincidentally, in you were able to whip us, and in the largest number ever, from different political parties, what is different not to whip them? And then I'll come to questions. Yes. You know, I was going to
also join my colleagues about this concern, which was detected by the Auditor General about the issue of procurement and contracts management. You see, to me, it also reflects on what I normally used to ask about the risk management. And then also about your systems, whether are your systems talk into each other. As long as the system doesn't talk to each other, we are going to continuously having problems. And then come to another fact. DC, I was very much impressed about your input when you were saying you visited the JSE, Johannesburg Stock Exchange. But when are you going to visit this institution?
Parliament.
Yes, in terms of labor. You know why I'm raising it? It is alleged, I would say it is an allegation, but to me it happened several times. I was given a secretary from a labor broker. That is a contradiction. That our hope is the department to come and safeguard us to make sure that everything is in order. But if there is no similar reason, making a follow-up, those challenges will stay there. About the issue of the labor brokers. Therefore, my question, what mechanism and what system do you have in order to make sure to monitor the issue of the labor brokers? Because that's where the conflicts are starting. What mechanism? What do you do? How do you measure? Because I was really impressed somewhere in your report when you were saying that some of the companies are complying and they've sent you some of the information about the labors. That is very positive. But with labor brokers, that is a contradiction. And then, again, if you can assist me, because I'm not good in terms of mathematics and accounting, maybe clarify me. In one of the pages, I think in your slide, in your input about the issue, page 22, about the additional allocation received from National Treasury with amount of 26 billion rands. Therefore, my question, checking on page 30 about the budget which was allocated to you, which is 2.7 billion rands. My question would be, therefore, was the 26 million rands included in the 2.7 billion? If it's included, that's good. If it's not included, why it was not included? But I assume it was included. But I don't know. May you please clarify us that what happened is that the 26 million rents from the National Treasury. And then, with the issue of sheltered environment sectors, this is something which also is worrying me. I think Honourable Member Mlenza and Honourable Member Jacob touched some of the things. I don't know, because my submission was that why, besides the issue of people with psychological people, but the issue of social workers, I don't know what role do you, is this section of this social worker playing in that regard? Because another thing which we have picked up, most or some, in particular in blacks, they don't have shelter. Are people with disabilities, but their homes where they're coming from, some they reported, they told us that it's very difficult, don't have shelter. Either that individual depends from the family, either from the sister or from the mother. If you check the age, that person is very much matured in that regard. And then also, the issue of access in the infrastructure which is given to them. I'll put an example. There was a worrying sector some time ago. We visited one year in Cape Town. There was a sort of a project. I can't remember what it is. When we arrived at, as we learned of things, also including that people with disability, they didn't have an access. That means they are in control that they work here. They can't go to their office on top because there is no lift. there's no access at all. That's Western Cape. And also, my colleagues have spoken about the infrastructure, which is very old. Also very big. The only place which was clean is where we are going to take rounds in our face. Some of the areas, the toilets which we've shown, you'll see that tiles, they've made a place of nesting. They're nesting there. It's very dirty. So you can see that there are challenges in terms of the health hazard. And then, DG, also, you know, I think Babchikov covered me about the issue of the transport. But also the Asalari, maybe something has been done. Because another question which is very key, the last one in Durban, we found that they are running short about the material. There's no material. It was about the month or two or three, so they're not working. But coming again, they're coming to work, but there's no material. Number two, I'm just asking myself, besides the contribution from the government side, where, who's making and who's monitoring about the income which they are getting from things which they are manufacturing? What's happening? Because some of them, you see the branches they've shown us, I'm telling you, it's good, very good. Even myself, if I do have money, I don't see any reason why I don't order anything from them. But where is this money going to? Is that they are able to, listen to me, this other way they are able to receive incentives from the government. The others, they don't have from the material which they are selling. At the end, they don't have money. Who is monitoring that process? And then another thing which I wanted to ask, you see, there is something which is worrying, in terms of the page 11, in terms of compliance, said the total in compliance is 64%. So my challenge is that, what is the department doing with these people continuously of failing to comply? Mama Chela and Whip from the committee, I wanted to give you a copy from the marvelous job which is done by the department today. This is not our way. There is an advancement which they are doing in terms of making sure that they are going to our provinces. And that is a good initiative. I've forgotten the name of the project, but I'll give the copies to my colleagues. They wanted to, because we want to assist. But now, if there are people who are continuously not complying, what is the department doing? How many people are being brought to justice? For example, in our province, I continuously teaching in one thing that we are having seasonal workers, and the disadvantage of the seasonal workers is the thing which was raised by Babu Jacobs, our teacher of memorandum of understanding. What does it mean? What does it entail? Because time and again, they take people for cheap labor instead of contributing to labor. And these are some of the worrying factors. I think, Mama, let me leave it there. But to emphasize that, please, teaching. May you please try to discipline some of the people. Some people, they need discipline. Because if they are not being disciplined, they will continuously undermine a good job, a good initiative which you are doing. Thank you, Chair.
Okay,
Member,
I'm going to... we're not going to have the second round, but I've got two hands. The members forgot it's one or two questions. Honorable Mabisi and then Honorable Mlenda.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm also happy that we do have the conservative unqualified reports for this department, but then on the ground is something else. to an extent that in a meeting in the Northern Cape, we requested the CEO to visit the institution around Eastern Cape, and he promised and he said he will bring the report in a meeting today, unless there's some confusing issues. I didn't hear him saying anything about the Eastern Cape institution. You promised to give a report in this meeting.
Chair, I only one question left. It's to the DG. Chair, you will remember that when we met last year, it was after we had looked at labor centers, and the DG's report concurred with our findings around gap morale related to non-availability of resources, training, and all. If you could just get an update, Chair.
Thank you. Also, to add on what Honorable Mlengana is saying on the DG's visit to provinces, if we can hear DG whether the resources in those centers are now available. For example, my constituency office is just next door the labor center. There is nothing, DG, there is no phone, still no phone. I appreciate that that office is now going to be open more than 2 days a week. But can we give the people the resources so that they are able to work? Even in the Eastern Cape, we did go there. There's an office outside PE. If those people can really also be given resources. On that shelter employment, we will put out everything on this, because after visiting all these shelter employment factories, we as a committee, we want to have a subject for debate in the House. That's why we are really emphasizing on the CEO and the department putting heads together to make sure that these factories are being taken care of. If you look at Peter Maritzburg, for example, you find people, it's just a pity you don't even, maybe if they had some cars or something to, you know, let time pass, they were going to do that. But because they've got nothing to do, they sit down. That man you heard, he pays 60 rand a day to go to work. But just to go and sit down and do nothing. So those are the things that we want the new CEO and the department to look at when we stand up in the House, because we will be talking to the public at large. We must have some strategies with it. How are we? Because if you're going to expand Mpumalanga and Limpopo, and still the ones that you have are not well resourced, how am I going to open up more? Because we are also looking at these factories going to, maybe let's say one factory in Northwest. You can't have it in Potchefstroom for the whole time, for the rest of the lifetime, our lifetime, or our grandchildren's lifetime. You must expand it to other parts of that particular province. So we're looking at one in Limpopo, one in Mpumalanga, but they are still not enough. So let's make sure that the ones that we have, you said, DG, we're going to have a snap debate on this. Because we said 2009, 10, 11, 12, 13, we must
as the Honorable Mlenzana has said, we want to see something that in our time in Parliament has made value. And then Honorable Sibande asked about DG, what are you doing coming to this institution in the Labour Department? Now our mind is on the safety. Then those who were here, those Labour, I remember Honorable Khalipi. I don't know whether or not I missed them, Karipo and missed them, Rutubo. I don't know whether you were here when I fell in the lift. Whether safety measures looking only outside and in these big institutions you're not doing. Even now, when you are, that lift is still not in use. There is that paper outside when you get it, come in. First aid rooms in this shattered employment. The Peter Maristberg one is excellent. It's a clinic, it's a small clinic. But the Western Cape one, go to the after this, you go to the Western Cape one, you must ask them for the first aid room or a kit. Maybe they have actually rectified, because even the medicines that were in, I mean, they have expired. So if we are dealing with people actually who are also mentally, just now the other one made the other one cross, angry, then just hit like Honorable Blends and I would say, no bandages, you see. How do you assist? You know, we're looking at these things, but we forget to look at the practicality that can happen in these countries. Self-help employment also, you only achieved two of your planned targets for the year. 78% of the total planned targets were not achieved. If maybe you can explain to us why that cannot be achieved. We want to assist you. That's why we're asking these questions. The change, it's on page 22 of the presentation, DG. The trained SMMEs, you came okay with your presentation when you were doing the breakdowns, but on the 2,842 managers that were trained, you didn't tell us how many women, how many let's say females and how many males there, and where. Where is problems? I'll leave it at this. Can you respond please?
No,
if there's a need, we will come back, but if time allows us.
Well, thank you very much, Chair and Honourable Members. Firstly, we would want to take this opportunity to appreciate two things. One, the constructive engagement and inputs from this select committee, but also secondly the mere fact that you have taken a very keen interest around the sheltered employment factories and the subsequent visit, for an example. And I think that would, you know, essentially assist us piggybacking on your statement, for an example, Chair, that your intention is to assist us, and I think indeed, I mean, that kind of the oversight work that you are performing on let's say specifically self is indeed going to assist us. Now, we identified the sheltered employment factories in the beginning of this year as one of the priority projects that we needed to focus on, precisely because there are fundamental questions that we're beginning to ask ourselves. One of them, I think, has come out in the inputs that have been made. CEF is an institution that was founded in the mid-40s with a specific mandate. Now, how do we begin to review the mandate of CEF so that it has got to talk to where the country is and where the country is moving, for an example? It's a discussion that the CEO and I at some point, I can't remember when we were meeting somewhere and we just had to exercise the minds on this thing. I mean, CEF was designed at some point to deal with the question specifically post the Second World War. Now, that, is gone, so it's in a particular era now. You talk about a democratic era, era of peace, and era of reconstruction, and era of development. Now, that's where the question of the business case does come in, because in a sense, it's just that the term that is used is being, it's called business. I don't know why it's called business, but basically it has got to look into what do we want to use CEF for, in simplistic terms. And there are three important areas, focal points, that have got to be looked into. One of them is how CEF contributes to the overall effort of employment creation. That's one aspect. The other aspect is how CEF has got to deal with the issue, Honorable Jacobs, of skilling people out there. I can't remember, Mr. Maroto, but we were also briefly just taking a look at the question of what we used to have agencies in this country, for an example, whether it was in the army and I don't know where else and so forth, but focused on the question of in certain cases intangible, but also in certain cases on the question of skills, upgrading and skills development and stuff like that. We still do have them also at the level of higher education and training, I think. Now, so CEF has got to come into specifically that kind of space amongst others and so on. But also, we can't lose sight of the issue of the disabled and people living with disabilities. We also need to make an end to that. So it is this kind of graphics and these areas that have got to be balanced up in a sense. So we are quite grateful by the keen interest that they have attained. There's a lot of potential. I mean, truly speaking, there's a lot of potential to turn around itself and make itself to be something else and so forth. But there are other dependencies, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, that also must be factored in. And I think some of the issues, they do dovetail with others. For instance, the issue of capacity of our people to manage, as managers say, is dependent, among other things, on how CEF eventually turns out and happens to be structured. Because the manner in which a structure, an institutional structure such as CEF, for instance, will turn out, will also inform, amongst other things, the type of quality and character of people that you must attract as managers to manage those particular institutions. So these are some of the dependencies that I think we will also need to somewhat take into account. And I would hope that the fact I do trust that the business case, the work that's been undertaken amongst other things is going to systematically sort of deal with this issue. But of course, there will be further elaboration from the managers concerned around the question of staff and some of the issues that have been raised. One of the questions that was raised is the question of why do we appoint service providers when you have people hired. It's a question that I agree with. It's a valid question. It's a question that also some of ourselves from time to time we ask this question, but you know, why is it that we also hire people to tell us that which we know, and so on? But I've come to the realization that in some cases we do so, and I'm not saying in all the cases, you know, but in some cases, in the majority of cases, we do so because we ourselves do not have sufficient time to be able to do those things. I'll give you an example. I have a 25-year experience in managing people and organizations. In there is the question of change management, for an example. But it is also the kind of work, for instance, change management itself is the kind of work that would require that you just zoom into it and focus into it and develop certain programs and try that and so forth. But the fact of the matter is that I am unable to do it on a full-time basis precisely because my job scope and definition, you know, varies right across different different functional areas, if I may put it that way. As a result of which, it's possible that you will be wanting to develop a change management approach of sorts. And many of us here will discover that actually we are schooled in the field of change management, for instance, but we are unable to do so precisely because of, you know, whatever, and therefore you will pull in perhaps the services of the service provider. Those are some of the reasons why some of the issues of that nature do come in. And it depends really on the level of complexities that you also do come across from time to time. So I don't think it's a valid question. So all it says is that I think we should note that we should exercise caution from time to time, the balanced approach that we should have from time to time. It should not just be the first preferred option that, oh, well, get an external service provider to come in and so on, when perhaps we can be in a position to do it or something like that with available internal resources and things of that nature. So that's the one point relating to a question. And the question of vacancies, we have stepped up efforts to the filling of vacancies, but one of those was we had to assemble a team, for an example, which also involved two chief directors from from provinces, some of our provinces, to design an approach on the question of filling a number of these vacancies within a short space of time, for an example. And because, it is possible to do so. It is possible to do so. I usually make an example and say, I came in May last year for a post of a DDG which involves the cabinet process, for an example. It took us just under 3 months to be able to deal with it. I'm just making an example. If we were able to do that at that level, first we have the complexity of assembling a minister to come to constitute a panel to interview, but also importantly, a member to cabinet for subsequent approval and so forth, and find space within the cabinet agenda to be able to do that. I mean, if we're able to do it within the space of something like 3 months and so forth, you know, with regards to other positions, it should be possible. But also importantly, it depends on the structure that you're designing overall to run with the question of the driving, you know, aggressively the question of the filling of such vacancies and so on. So we will also, we've undertaken this event to continue to brief the members of the select committee on the progress that we are making. the issue about centralization, I'm sure it's going to be responded to. It's part of the some of the issues that we will have to subsequently sort of review and look at. I certainly do not know what the reasons were for moving away from decentralization to centralization. But I suspect also it's centralization versus decentralization is also a capacity-related kind of matter of sorts. Now, I think it would be safe for me to say, honourable member, that let's note that point and look at, because for instance, for me, that's one of the areas of dependency, if I may put it that way. If you set up a structure, that must make organizational and institutional sense. Amongst other things is to look at your specific functional areas of management, for an example, competencies, required levels of capacity there, and so on. It's also look into that. And perhaps that in itself could deal with the issue of the extent to which you decentralize and the system that you then subsequently put in place to regulate the actual function and operation of an institution. But I'm sure there will be more of a reflection on this. The question of the decline compensation fund, if I may put this thing, if there is in the Department of Labor, I think if I may have to develop what I may call a weighted scale, for an example. In other words, I'm saying we have all sorts of other areas that are challenging and so forth. But the major blot on our work thus far, in totality as the Department of Labor, is what are the problems at the compensation fund. In terms of the level, I think the honourable member asked the question of what is the nature of the decline at this time. I can only sum it up because I think you will need a dedicated session to deal with the specific issues there in the fund. I can only sum it up and say you have a conglomeration of factors there that contribute to some of these particular problems. A manual-based system, in other words, the flip side of a manual-based system, for instance, it means it's in, you know, the center of that, it's an IT system kind of issue. So your system is one of those particular areas. You have the kind of technologies and business processes that we apply. There is probably one area that we should also look into. You also have human resources, kind of issues, and specifically the issue of, you know, maybe looking at the whole question of what kind of institutional culture and organizational culture are we having there, and so on. And that, combined with business processes and technological sort of issues, does bring about the conglomeration of the set of problems that I'm talking about that seem to be experiencing there. Now, having said so, I mean, the question really is that we do need to step up efforts in turning around the compensation fund to become something else other than what it has assumed. So I'm saying if I were to develop a weighted scale, for an example, for me, that would be one area that has got to be, because it is a burning platform, and then of course followed by others that one could point out to. We also do note the issue of the issues raised by the auditor general on the question of non-compliance, particularly with SCM procedures and so on. We have taken note of those particular matters, and we those set of issues, including issues that are also recurring, in a sense, that's where AG was also expressing a view or an opinion that says there appears to be some element of regression, as well, while it's progressing on the one hand, but and that's where also our action plan is crafted on the basis of that, begin to respond to some of those particular matters. I think the question of the retention strategy, and it's going to occupy us for quite some time. In other words, that issue of retention, I think, was raised in the context, for an example, of how do we ensure that you do not have this kind of exodus of our inspectors, for instance, who are searching for cleaner pressures and so forth. I do not see that as a problem solely of the Department of Labor per se. I think it's a public service-wide kind of issue. So let me give you some of the constraints that by way of example, that we have as this department and many others, for instance, in the public service. If Mr. Cecil's here was to decide today that, he was to leave, because for some reason, he had two reasons. The one reason is that he looks at me and he thinks I'm very ugly. And the second reason is that, of course, he's not being paid enough, and therefore there's a better offer somewhere else. Now, you have very little or absolutely no room to be able to retain them. Because the question of your salary levels and scales and whatever and so on is dealt with somewhere else at public service, for an example. So you will not, because there is a structured kind of manner in which we function and operate, and we are going to follow that. So these are some of the constraints that you will find there. You may be wanting, for an example, to say, okay, your inspectors must get a better sort of a salary level or something like that and so on. And if that has got to be achieved, you do need to have a public service and administration process and so forth, which is then a structural mechanism. So those are some of the complexities around the issues of retention, but I'm not suggesting that we should not be thinking about a retention strategy, for instance. Because the retention strategy can be both monetary or non-monetary and so forth, or a combination of both, and stuff like that. It depends how eventually it gets a practice. The last part that I would want to deal with, there's the issue about procurement and contract management. Look, we have, Chair, over a period of time accepted and acknowledged that around the issues of contract management, by and large, have been found wanting. And I suppose there are a number of reasons why we had those kinds of experiences and so on. But we have also begun through the CFO focusing our energies on the question of how do we then deal with the issue of contract management moving forward and so on. precisely because it is also a disconcerting kind of a issue that ourselves to see as one of the priority areas that we have to be. To be attended to. The question of the labor centers, I think the issue was we went through provinces and so on. I'm beginning to realize something, Chair, that I think we need, perhaps we will also need ourselves to be proactive in terms of identifying issues wherein we will want to come back and report on before the portfolio committee, because I think that would be quite useful.
I'm sorry, my apologies, Chair.
Yes, with the portfolio committee. I'm sorry. My apologies, Chair, and honorable members. Before the select committee. Before the select
committee. What you can do on that matter, your problem. To actually report you what is happening in this, around. So that when you come here, then you've got that information already that major, for example, in terms of you. This is happening. Health press should be able to tell with banks that this is happening in Lydenburg, in Hazyview, in Oman.
Yes.
So you have that information for us.
Yes. No, I accept that, Chair. I accept that, Chair. But what I wanted to say was to say we undertook the visit, but out of the visit, we also have a project that is running. We now call it Project Shanguga, which is basically a systematic sort of response and reaction to the issues that were raised when the Director General and his team visited various provinces for the country. So work is being done at that particular level, and we hope that perhaps in the next, but maybe the next 2 or 3 months, we could be in a position to appear before the select committee to brief you about progress that's being registered at that level. Because we felt that, you know, there are a number of issues that arose when we visited the provinces and so forth, And the question is, how do we then deal with them? How do we begin to respond to them? So you know, you will not be in a position to deal with the issue of infrastructure requirements in the labor center, for instance, away from some other structural matters, such as whether or not do we have sufficient people there, and so on and so on and so forth, and whether or not you have, our labor centers are accessible or not for that matter. So we would request an opportunity before to appear before the select committee to actually take you on board and brief you on some of these particular projects as and when they are actually unfolding. I think we would also need to be proactive on our side in doing so. Honourable Chair, Honourable Member, can I then ask that on some of the issues that I did not respond to that were questions that were posed, that members of the management team then deal with those particular issues. There were issues on enforcement, case flow management, and case flow management, yes. There were issues on vetting, there were issues on non-compliant SCM, there were issues on the strategy for increasing sales, for example, SEF, the MOU, a question Mr. Kettleness and so on, maintenance of buildings. I think CFO has got to take that one. Monitoring labor blockers, Mr. Kettleness has got to deal with the one. 26 million for the CF and so on, as part of the 2.7 billion. CFO has got to take that. I mean, those are some of the things. So in whatever sequence, but I think we have noted the questions. So through you, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. The question from Honourable Jacobs was around the MOUs, what they entail. I will take them one by one. The MOU with Lesotho deal with issues of labour dispute resolution, social dialogue, social security, and then an issue around compensation for occupational injuries and diseases of citizens of Lesotho that are working in South Africa. That MOU is currently under review because it has come to an end. There's a delay there in that there have recently been elections in Lesotho, and there's now a new Minister of Labour. So there are engagements at the departmental level with them. The second MOU is with Namibia. This was signed in 2008, and it also deals with dispute resolution, social dialogue, productivity, labor inspections, employment services, employment equity, and labor law reform. Do you remember that when we were discussing the issue of labor brokers here, they had already an amendment to their legislation about labor hire, which is similar to labor brokers, and an engagement at that level as to what the approach of the different countries are on that issue. That is also currently being reviewed. The third one is the one on with China. This goes back to 2003, the relationship with China. And the issues that are covered in that MOU deal with social security, human resource development, re-employment programs through social plans, and labor market institutions and policies. We are currently in a process where there's an exchange of a draft MOU, which the two ministers will sign as soon as the legal processes have been completed. And the last one with Cuba also goes back to 2003, covered issues of employment, social security, occupational health and safety, and we had very good cooperation with Cuba, where in September 2005, a team of 20 employment and employment services practitioners from our provinces went to Cuba to be trained around the community development worker system. Also in 2011, a team of 20 inspectors from different provinces also undertook a visit to Cuba for exchanges on improving inspection services. And in fact, we had two teams of inspectors of 20 in a team that gone to Cuba to undergo training. And the way in which the Cubans work is that when you send people there to be trained, they then give them a project when they come back to their country to implement, and then they send those instructors or professors that trained them in Cuba to come here to do an evaluation of to see whether what they were trained about they are implementing here. So those are the MOUs that we have reported on in the annual report. And what has happened with most of these MOUs is that in the areas of social security, for example, and social dialogue, dispute resolution, they have sent delegations or officials here to South Africa to go to the CCMA to look at dispute resolution, to go to NetLab to look at how we conduct social dialogue in the country, the structures, the processes. And also in regard to social security, they've undertaken visits to the compensation fund and to the UIF to understand how we are implementing social security in the country through the unemployment insurance fund, through the compensation fund. And then more generally as to how our department functions and operates. And then we've had an exchange of materials as well, so as to assist them in the development of their own policies in these areas of cooperation. The issue of the labor brokers, I thought that the issue there was more of an inspection issue, which I had to dealt with, but at the legislative level, we of course have the LRA bill now before the portfolio committee. They have concluded a clause-by-clause consideration of the LRA, and hopefully once they have adopted the reports on both the PCA and the LRA, those will go into the National Assembly and subsequently to the NCP. So that process is underway. But I think the inspection part of how these labor brokers operate and function now in terms of conditions of employment and other matters, I think IES can elaborate on that. Thank you, Jay. Thank you, DG.
Thanks. I think invariably the issues that have been raised by the select committee is around the repetitive findings that are now appearing in our report. I think it is highly true that yes, we now have our repetitive findings. Also to emphasize the observation by Honorable Mlenzana that yes, indeed, these are residual issues. They are residual issues in the sense that the Auditor General finds that they are not probably substantive enough to ratify our report, but we still have to deal with them. I think the challenge that I have in the finance is that the issues that I now have, I think they go beyond the financial management. The issue of procurement, the other issue that is not here, the issue of asset management and also expenditure management. I'm responding to it in two ways to say. I think we need to probably from the department to acknowledge that these issues that are now left is not probably the issue of finance, but for me to go out and educate all the officials of the department to make sure that we deal with these issues. I'll make an example with the issue of asset management, that what we have, we've got 438 offices in the department. So the issue around asset management is that in the offices they will have meetings, and in some cases they will just take a chair next door and bring it to this office during their one of their meetings, and they forget to take back. Unfortunately, the audit process is in two ways, both in terms of volume and also in terms of success. If that chair is left here and the AG comes and conducts an audit and find it here, then it was not supposed to be here. It contravenes the asset management legislation that, one, the chair must be identified, two, it must be in the correct location. So we will be found wanting with that particular chair, but because it's one and we've got maybe 30,000 chairs in the department, you will find it not probably substantive enough to be qualified, but reported on the other matters. But the issue is that that particular chair, I will have to educate every member of the department that has got an office around asset management. That look, whenever you need to take a chair next door, please take it back where it belongs after that meeting, so that we are not finding wanting on these issues. Hence, I'm saying that the issue I think is now going outside the financial management, but to all the officials of the department. Also around the issue of the one on procurement, that we are going around throughout the country educating managers to say, look, the managers in the department are in various provinces, sit on the procurement committees as prescribed by the PPPEF, that there must be a bid aggregation committee. So those managers administer those, lead those committees in the province. They must be aware of these particular issues. As a result, these issues are just one issue per province or two issues per province, but because they are non-compliant in terms with the specific legislation, they find themselves in our report. So that's what we are doing in terms of going out there and making sure that we educate not only in finance, they will have financial skills, but because the whole management also involves managers who are not financial in their nature in terms of their qualification. They need to understand what they need to do so that we eliminate the residual issues that we have in our audit report. And yes, I think we are responding to it. Then the other one is probably one of the punitive aspects that is required by PFMA, that we shouldn't take any prisoners when it comes to this. But I think we need also to educate them to make sure that they are aware of what they need to do with regards to the structural issues that we have. The issue of monitoring shattered employment factors with regards to finances, yes, we are doing it, but not actively, effectively as In finance, we do have a more public a unit that monitors all our public entities in terms of the compliance part. The operation side, I think CFS need to have their own capacity, need their help to have their own capacity to do their finances. But from time to time, we do advise on specific issues that come to our attention that are problematic. One of those being the debtors management, for instance, to say, yes, they have to produce, they have to sell. But one of the big elements that need to come up very, very strongly is that when you sell, you need also to collect the money that we have sold. Right now, I think they've got quite a huge amount that they need to write off that they've sold for the items that they've sold to government entities that have not paid. So that to me, that the collection part on the operations need to be improved. This is the area that we also engage sheltered employment factories in terms of advising them to say, look, this is the whole production side. You produce, you sell, but also the bigger element of it, you also collect your revenue so that you can recycle the amount. The other issue that I need to deal with is the issue of 26 million. I think on the slide in terms of additional allocation that was made to compensation fund. Members would know that the department is also a, we are responsible for paying compensation fund in terms of the injury. We are receiving allocation from Treasury that needs to be paid or to be claimed by compensation fund in cases of injury on duty of the public servant. Not all public servants, the ones that are not carrying guns. So the amount we discovered that the amount that were allocated to the department for the injury on duty of public servants was not enough in terms of the claims that the compensation fund was put into. So we had to go for an additional allocation of 26 million precisely for that purpose to cover the backlog. It was a once-off amount to cover the backlog in terms of claim from compensation fund. Subsequent to that, the Treasury has then increased the allocation that it gives to the Department of Labor to cover the injury on duty for the public servants. I think I've covered all the questions that I've identified that relate to finance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'll be very brief because I think DJ has touched on most of the issues. Sorry about that. I think the DJ has touched on most of the issues around the enforcement, the inspectorate. But there are one, two areas that I just want to highlight, which the honourable members raised in relationship to whether we have consultation with the Justice Colleges for the training of inspectors. Now, while the processes may not be the same, I think the principle that underlies the enforcement in terms of the justice system as well as inspectors may have similarities, and we are in consultation with them to train some of our inspectors across the country in different provinces so that we can use them as a sort of a train the trainer model to train other inspectors on top of it. You would appreciate that the Justice College is structured so that it provides service to the justice system, not just fundamentally to other departments, and therefore they have given us that scope to be able to train our inspectors in terms of that. The retention of inspectors, rather the retention of inspectors, is a multifaceted issue. Let me just highlight one anomaly that we've picked up. During the construction of the Gautrain, we lost more OHS inspectors to the Gautrain development companies because of the skill set that they possess. And therefore you will always have that anomaly that skills would be in a sense poached. But the flip side of it is that you now have people in the open labor market that understand enforcement and the OHS culture from the department of labor. So there is a possible flip side to the coin. With respect to enforcement and the 74% versus the 80% compliance level that we are required, compliance fundamentally is a responsibility of employers. Full stop. So when we go out and do inspection, the first thing that we pick up is to what level do we have compliance in the labour market? And that is the figure that you see in front of you. We now have a 74% level of compliance against a target of 80%. And the one approach is that we need to look at where is it that we have problems. The table is really clear in relationship. There are three areas that we have problems in Western Cape. It is in Limpopo, and it is in KZN. And therefore the approach is, and therefore, number one, to deal with those provinces where a high level of non-compliance exists. As a first approach. The second approach is to say, how then do you structure your enforcement regime so that you have greater levels of compliance across the country? So there's a multifaceted approach to deal with levels of non-compliance in this area. Well, the issue of labor brokers, and that's the last area because this is the third area that the Honourable Minister raised, was the issue of labor brokers. Again, the approach is twofold. One is that you have a labor regime that deals effectively with the issue of labor brokers, and therefore the legislative amendment would seek then to put in place a regime that deals with Section 1 for the issue of labour brokers. But the second area is that labour brokers will be dealt with similarly to what you would deal with any other employer in this regard. So there's no distinction at this point in terms of whether you're a labour broker or not, or an employer in this regard, or client of the labour broker. You will therefore be dealt with similarly to any other employer as a labour broker in terms of inspection and enforcement in this regard. Thank you.
I'll attempt to respond to...
Can you be brief?
Yes, I'll be brief. The issue in relation to centralization and decentralization, if I were to be brief in answering that question, there's a background of the inspector's DG of a rampant lotting in the factors in the past, in the previous management. In the previous management chair, there was a rampant lotting in the factors, in the various factors, and the intention to introduce centralization was about ensuring that you minimize the level of loading in the factories. That's one aspect. Secondly, it's about creating norms and standards applicable to all of the factories so that you develop in the process a group identity, a group identity. The third component, production, a requirement, production planning, and the distribution of orders, therefore, takes place at head office, distributed to the various factories. We may elaborate further, Chair, with regards to another meeting with you as to the pros and cons of centralization and decentralization. There are various administrative functions that are undertaken at the moment at the central level. So centralization is about minimizing the levels of loading with regards to production in the various factors. That's why a lot of functions are centralized, and secondly, it's about ensuring that there's an equitable distribution of production and raw materials in the various factors. So that's that question, Chair. The second one that the DG will touch upon relates to medical facilities in the factories. In the past, because these factories served a minority, they had on a quarterly basis nurses from medical institutions visiting the factories. Post-1994, that facility was gone. But in most of the factories, they had employed psychologists. But precisely because we could not be able to keep up as the factories with the solid demands of psychologists, that facility was then therefore discontinued. As a result, you've got medical facilities in the factories where in some instances, say, on a quarterly basis, nurses would come, but it's not as consistent as it used to be in the past, precisely because those resources now are serving the whole of the Republic, not a minority section of our population. That's in relation to medical facilities. Issues related to cleanliness, Chair, is issues that I would pursue. Issues related to the Port Elizabeth visit, I would not have been able to do it because your recent visit, where I don't put a visit, was only last week when we met with you. I undertake to go to Port Elizabeth personally to do an investigation with regards to issues that we've raised and submit a return report with regards to the situation in that particular section. I will do that. The rest of the other issues...
You want to tell us that since we went to you haven't been there.
I went there subsequently, not on the basis of
what you are raising, the cleanliness, even from outside, coming from outside, you will think there are no people inside.
Only about 2 months ago, Chair, in that factory, but not as a result of the visit, but as a result of managerial problems in the particular factory. For an example, we've appointed someone else as a factory manager, and from his point of view, we picked up some few problems with regards to his ability to assert his role. But I had a teacher, I would go back and just to ensure that with regards to my last visit to the factory, and once again to ensure that everything else is in order.
Honourable Member, I think will agree with me if I say, can we give the CEO 14 days to come back to us to tell us what has he found there and what has happened? 14 days, please. Because then we were crying. The people, because of the nature of the people in the factory, when they looked at us, what they were telling us, you know, we couldn't even go to the toilet.
I'd like to say this to the CEO. Never again should you make empty false promises, empty promises, because it was a promise that when we leave, you are going there and you give us a feedback today. So never again. We accept it all. Give us false promises. We want the truth.
Okay, just finish up.
Okay, I'll just provide you with a detailed report. So the rest of the other issues which have got to do with administrative responsibilities of the virus structures, I intend following them up with regards to the virus management, to ensure that the issues that you would have raised are issues that, in any event, the factor manager must be able to attend. Thank you, Chair.
Gigi, I
will
just
Honourable Chair, I suspect so. It's safe to say that necessarily one, and in the sense that we have made these undertakings to then say we'll also want to come back to the Select Committee to brief you on some key critical areas, for example. And I would also suggest that perhaps when what it means is that there has got to be a session on staff. There has got to be a session on, and let me just say, the priority projects, for an example, which includes the issue of what I referred to earlier on as the Shanduka project, in responding to some of the challenges that people are facing at the Liver Center level, and just evaluating some progress and what the nature of that progress is. So if we leave it at that with that understanding, I think I'm fine then, Chairperson.
Okay, let me thank you, Gigi, and your team for the presentation, and you had the member appreciated, you know, the manner in which your presentation was formulated and the information that we got. We will slot you for the first term. 2013, and then we will deal with the Shanduka project compensation fund. We won't go maybe to other, we want to deal specifically with specific issues that we could deal with them like in this last quarter. And then let me thank everyone, CEO. Yabona, we are together in that thing of self-employment. We will inform the department when we still going to talk to the NCOB when we can slot the SNAP debate on that. We will inform you, Didi. Members, thank you so much. The meeting is adjourned.
I have to.